From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hodags, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils, so keep it tuned right here in the studio with investigator Shelley Wright and Sam the Animal Steel, our producer at the board this evening. We spoke last hour a little bit about a mystery close to home, that it just, the ripples grow wider and wider and then retract and come closer and closer. It's a very multifaceted mystery. And that story of Joshua P. Warren's uncle, Claude Calloway, who mysteriously vanished just weeks after a hunting photo was taken in which his head was invisible. His head was missing in this photograph. Josh, that was one of the first stories Josh wrote for the Asheville Citizen Times when he was just a teenager, and I actually pulled the newspaper clipping from this story that Josh wrote for the Asheville Citizen Times about his uncle Claude Calloway, and they had done up, the art department at Asheville Citizen Times had done a mock version of this photo of Claude Calloway with his head missing, and it was pretty good. So I'll dig that up. Maybe I'll put that on the Speaking of Strange Facebook page. Want to tell folks about something I want to do to go a little interactive with our listeners. This is also on the Speaking of Strange Facebook page. I've invited folks to make some requests or recommendations for bumper music. You know, those little segments of music, the minute or so coming into a segment and the minute or so going out. If you think you got what it takes to suggest some good stuff, some good blood pumping or some good chill, you know, hair raising sort of music that fits the material here on Speaking of Strange, 15 years strong out of WWNC 570, go by the Facebook page and comment on that post. I've pinned it to the top of the Speaking of Strange Facebook page, so look it up. It's pinned to the top right there. It's a picture of my handwriting and scrawl. You know, like I say, every bumper playlist for each episode of Speaking of Strange nowadays is handmade, lovingly handcrafted, and usually pitched in the garbage bin over here. But I figured, let's make this fun. If there are listeners who appreciate the music or would appreciate hearing some of the music, suggest a couple of songs. Suggest an in and an out. And for an in, something that gets to a punchline in about a minute. And for an out, something that's either instrumental or has a good minute intro, so we're not just talking over a lot of lyrics and jumbling it up. But you know how this works. I think even an amateur has a couple good tunes up their sleeve. So calling all amateurs among the SOS listening community, you can try that out and have some fun. And if we put your songs on the air and you want the shout out, if you want us to mention your name, I'm not averse to that. And we'll set the playlist aside for you, maybe even get it autographed by Shell Vance or Sam. So there it is, your opportunity to interact and hear your contributions on the air here at Speaking of Strange. This hour, I had a few ideas I wanted to toss around. Last week, we talked about Lydia, the ghost of Jamestown, North Carolina. She was on her way home to High Point when she died in a car accident. Different versions of the story told it differently. Sometimes they say that Lydia was already hitchhiking home from a dance, or the car had broken down and she was a pedestrian. She was walking and she was struck by a car. Other versions that she was riding home, you know, and was in a car accident and killed. I spoke with Mike Reniger. Mike Reniger is, he's a North Carolina scholar of ghost stories, and he's written a number of books. He's the author of Tar Heel Terrors, Roadside Revenants, and Ghosts of the Triad. Mike Reniger is an interesting guy, and I think he's been interviewed on Speaking of Strange in years past, but I struck up a conversation with him, or exchange with him, just in the last week or so, brought to his attention that while I don't have a whole lot of fresh insight into the Lydia story, it's still being told, as last week's episode demonstrates. And I think it's a really engaging story. A hitchhiking ghost, a traveling phantom. Phantom Traveler, I think, was the encyclopedia entry for that sort of phenomenon.
That was it.
Anyway, Mike, good guy, and he's done his research. And his thinking was way ahead of me. My thoughts, after we taped last week's show, were Lydia. In this day and age, you should be able to find that name and pin it on a death certificate that puts cause of death as, you know, automobile accident or struck by car or whatever, early 1920s. He's way ahead of me on this, and a team of people who've worked with him on his books and investigations, they've found parallels in almost every instance except a specific name. While there is a woman by the name of Lena who was killed in a traffic accident and was about the right age, there was a woman by the name of Annie who actually died in a car accident at that overpass. That overpass down there in Jamestown, North Carolina, is locally known as Lydia's Bridge. This I didn't realize, but
really?
They've got a Lydia's Bridge much as we have Helen's Bridge. And it got me to thinking, what is it about bridges? Bridges are notoriously haunted places. Maybe it's a superstitious factor. Maybe it's the fact that bridges are often tucked away and kind of remote. They're utilitarian by day, but at night nobody has any business around bridges. So there's just something kind of eerie about a dark bridge in the middle of the night in the fog. Wouldn't you agree, Shelley?
Oh, yes, I would.
Especially Helen's Bridge overlooking Asheville. And we've tried and tried to get to the bottom of that. And do I believe that a woman named Helen hanged herself from that bridge after her child was killed in a fire at Zealandia Estate? I just don't believe there's the evidence that that ever happened. Although, when we were investigating a few years ago, I did find that a fellow named James Monnery, who lived up the hill at the Hazard House, it was called Beaumont Lodge, he had shot himself through the heart, committed suicide, just up the hill from Helen's Bridge. He was the valet, a young British Englishman, and he was a valet for Philip Henry, who owned the Zealandia Estate and who built what's now popularly known as Helen's Bridge. They say he was like a son to Philip Henry, and when he killed himself, it hurt Philip Henry. He's buried out at Riverside Cemetery, the grave unmarked, as far as I can tell. I know roughly where the plot is, and if there were a stone, I should have found it by now, but I can't find that there is a marker for him. But we do know that was, you know, a stone's throw from Helen's Bridge. So, there are some tragic deaths that we can place in that immediate vicinity. But maybe all the details were just someone spinning yarns over the years, because it's a little more dramatic to, even a little more sad to portray a woman distraught over the loss of her child in a tragic fire, hanging herself from the bridge, and then the phantom appearing to people and saying, "Have you seen my child?" Although everyone knows the stories about Helen's Bridge, and some people will talk about their cars giving out under the bridge.
Josh was dead.
Yeah, Josh, I think his car went out, and like the alternator died. The battery was gone. I mean, he had to have it towed from under Helen's Bridge.
He walked all the way down that creepy, creepy road.
Yeah, so there are these incidents. But, Shelley, have you ever spoken to anyone who said that they saw the apparition of Helen at the bridge?
No.
No. I think these stories are much older. It's always somebody saying, my uncle said, or so-and-so knew somebody who said.
Well, that's how I heard about it. My dad told me that a lady that he knew worked with some guy who said.
So the Helen story, I can't even find anybody who will, even off the record. And there are people who have stories to share, but they would rather not go on record. Actually, we've got one of those coming up. I'll wait for the next segment, and I'll tell a story out of Madison County near Marshall. Josh got the email from this person, and he forwarded it along to me. They asked that we not use their name, but I think I can share the details of this account, and it ties in nicely with some of our discussion last hour about the Brown Mountain Lights, only it's right up here in Madison County, 25 miles away. So next segment, let's talk about sort of a local version of the Brown Mountain Lights. Has anyone else listening out there heard of mystery lights as close by as Marshall or Madison County? I've never heard of that. I have heard that in the days before the cut on Bowcatcher, along the ridge where Helen's Bridge is now, that there were strange weather phenomena and ball lightning and plasmas and things of this nature that might lend themselves this sort of circumstance might lend itself to apparitions. But the conditions have changed. When you chop a mountain in half and build an interstate through it. Mm-hmm. the energy patterns change. And so they say since the open cut, which was, what was that, in the 70s that they did that? Do you remember?
I think so.
Since the open cut, that the apparitions on Bowcatcher, not as strong as in the good old days.
The good old days when everybody, remember when everybody used to honk? Going through the tunnel?
Yeah.
Nobody honks anymore.
Just the tourists.
No, the tourists don't even honk anymore. Everybody honks.
The sophisticated
tourists.
There's
honking going on.
Yeah. Not as much as there used to be.
Thank goodness.
People from Madison County still honk when they go through Bowcatcher Tunnel.
I think you should. Some people hold their breath.
Yeah. I don't like the honking.
You are listening to Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange on 570 WWNC, and we will be right back. A little Dwayne Eddy to play us out. Taking you down some dark roads on Speaking of Strange tonight. We were talking a little bit about the mysterious allure, the dark allure of bridges. I mean, fascinating. I was speaking with our friend Mike Mott. He's the author of books like Caverns, Cauldrons, and Concealed Creatures. Mike Mott's a fun guy. He likes to tick people off on Facebook, too. That's another reason I like him. Anyway, Mike Mott, yeah, I was chatting with him for Fate Radio a couple months back, and somebody in the Fate Radio chat room asked about what is it with trolls and bridges. And Mike just nailed that question, and I hadn't even thought about it before, even though I lived over in Iceland and I'm familiar with the superstition, the folklore, if you will, about trolls turning to stone if they're caught in sunlight. In Iceland, there aren't a lot of woods. There aren't a lot of trees. So if the trolls are traveling and they have to duck into the shadows when daylight comes, they might use a bridge. And in stories like the Three Billy Goats Gruff, the troll is under the bridge, not to collect a toll, but the troll is just staying out of the sunlight under the bridge.
Huh.
Interesting stuff, anyway. Trolls associated with bridges because it's dark under there. And so the darkness of bridges, it's an element you don't often think about, maybe, but there's some dark stuff that happens near some overpasses. Have you also noticed that most of the bridges along the interstate are named for fallen officers? It's nice to name a stretch of road after a state trooper who was gunned down nearby, but it's also kind of morbid.
It is.
I mean, it's a little bit tragic. Over here at the 74A bridge, or the Interstate 40 bridge over 74A going towards Fairview.
Jeff Bowen.
There's the Jeff Bowen Bridge. He was a fireman.
No, he's a state trooper.
Oh, okay, he's the state trooper that was killed over there. But I'm talking about on the east side or southeast, like you're going toward Fairview. That I-40 bridge is the trooper George C. Penn Bridge. George C. Penn was gunned down by a couple bank robbers near Fairview back in the late 30s. He was a young guy. He was like so gung-ho about his job that when he spotted the bank robbers turning around and running from a license check, they just had like a checkpoint set up, and they almost caught these bank robbers in it, and they did a three-pointer and turned around and hauled ass,
and
took
ass
after
back
him.
Then was like 28 miles an hour.
down these dirt roads, mud roads or whatever, and Trooper Penn took after him, and he chased them, and what I'm thinking as I read this account, it's like if you corner a wildcat, it's going to fight. And basically, he cornered a couple of wildcats. He chased them up a farm road behind a barn near a tobacco field out there near Fairview. And he got out with his pistol and started firing at them. They got out of their car and ran around the corner of the barn with a couple shotguns and rifles. So he was outgunned. And they shot him through the face and riddled him with bullets. And then ran over his body on the way out. And they were on the lam for a few days. Eventually, the notorious bank robbers and state trooper killers Payne and Turner were apprehended and went to the gas chamber. That's some fun local history, huh? But anyway, his name memorialized on the I-40 bridge. So the next time you're driving along I-40 there at 74A, the Bat Cave exit, the Chimney Rock exit, the Blue Ridge Parkway exit going toward Fairview, and Reynolds High School exit, George C. Penn was a young man who, for all his bravado, cornered a couple of wildcats. That's the way I look at it. He should have let them... Yeah, he should have given them a little room and waited for backup. But alas, and along. I got this message forwarded to me from our good friend, head honcho Joshua P. Warren. Got this message, and the sender asks to remain anonymous. But they wanted to share with Josh, wondered if he had any insight. He said he'd never heard such a thing from our immediate area. But here's what the writer shared with Josh. I wanted to touch base with you to see if you know of any sightings of something similar to the Brown Mountain Lights in Madison County, Marshall, North Carolina. I happened to get up about 4:40 a.m. this morning, and when I looked out the window past my front porch, I noticed many flashing lights. I stood there watching for quite a few minutes, and the lights seemed to be coming closer. There were many of them, and they appeared to be dancing, and they were white. Their shape was not like headlights or any artificial form of light. There's a high ridge over an abandoned mobile home across the street from me where I saw them, and they were all over the top of the ridge and all the way down the mountain and into the lower area where the mobile home is situated. I had never seen anything like this, and when I spoke to my son this morning, he said it sounds like the Brown Mountain Lights. I had never heard of them, but when I looked it up and saw some of the pictures, there's one photo in particular that looks almost exactly like the lights I saw. However, I did not see any sightings that had been noted in this area, Madison County or Marshall area. Thanks in advance for any information you can provide. Shelley is signaling me over here and ? Will-o'-the-wisps.
Just because there's so many lights involved and will-o'-the-wisps. I mean, you hear about that, that it's lights that you feel like you need to follow.
Right.
And if you're pure of heart, you'll be fine. If you're a child that's lost, you'll be fine. But if you do not have a pure heart, apparently they lead you to your death.
Over in Yancey County, I've seen a sort of a mystery light phenomena called foxfire that's attributed to rotten bark. It was in a very damp area called a bottom, in some bottom land along the Cane River over in Yancey County, and my cousin owned a tobacco field over there. So we were near his tobacco field, and he said, "Have you ever seen the fox fire?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, come over here." And it was getting about dark, and we went over there, and just the side of the field, under some trees, along the banks of the river, the ground was absolutely glowing.
Really?
And I walked over to check it out and picked up a piece of wood, and this wood was glowing.
It was glowing in your
this
hands.
This wood was glowing. The decomposing, it was damp, it was real soggy wood, but there is material in some of this matter that as it decomposes, it glows. I don't know if it's giving off like a phosphorus or something like that.
I've gotten some powders online before that are from earth or whatever, but they're natural, and I've used them in resins to put into rotted wood or like, you know, knotted wood, and so I'll fill in the knots and then they glow when it's exposed to light, then it charges it up, and then when you shut off the lights it glows through the knotty pine.
And it's a natural organic material, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually from rotting like yours is, but it is a natural phenomena. It's a powder. You get it.
Natural luminescence. Yeah, interesting stuff. And they actually sell it for projects and things like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of stuff in nature is illuminescent.
Illuminescent.
Is that a word?
There's even a special word for stones or minerals that are luminous when struck or rubbed together. There are a number of rocks that if you rub them, the friction will cause them to glow. In the Ute Indian culture, there was a ritual to summon spirits that they would put some of these stones in a piece of thin buffalo skin and make these rattles. And in this spirit ceremony, they would shake these rattles, and the stones inside the rattle would glow. I would like to see that Indian spirit ceremony with the glowing buffalo bladders. You never know what we're going to talk about.
Good band name.
Buffalo bladders. You never know what we're going to talk about from segment to segment. Anyway, Ghost Lights of Madison County. Think about it. We'll be right back. Speaking of strange. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm doing a little research during the break on the Ute ceremonial rattle, which contains quartz crystals. Yeah, there's a few people writing about it. It's just a kind of a bizarre thing, the fact that Native Americans were using this in their ceremonies hundreds of years ago. An uncompagre Ute Native Indian buffalo rawhide ceremonial rattle filled with quartz crystals. Flashes of light are visible when the quartz crystals are subjected to mechanical stress in darkness, a.k.a. shaking. A.k.a. shaking. The word for producing light in this way is called mechanoluminescence. That's not too bad. I swear there are other fancier words for it. I tried to teach one of those to myself. Sylvan and I were on this kick where we were trying to learn, you know, unwieldy, useless scientific terms. Mechanoluminescence makes sense. It sounds kind of like a combination of
mechanics, right? And luminescence.
Yeah, yeah. So that one seems rather self-explanatory, kind of like back in back in school when they would tell you to break down those compound words and maybe you can figure out what they mean. Anyway, the Ute ceremonial rattle. I also thought of, it says here that Francis Bacon in 1620 had observed that sugar, when it's crushed in the dark, may produce light. And I've seen this demonstrated. This blog writer says, I've heard that certain colored Necco wafers, when you snap them in the dark, the dry, if it's dry and cold, kind of like we were talking about the conditions when you see the brown mountain lights, maybe it's just that the ghosts down there have a sweet tooth and they're popping Necco wafers.
That's it.
Pink Necco wafers or green. I thought it was the green ones. Some people say it's the pink ones. I've never gotten a spark off a Necco wafer, but I kind of like them because they're nostalgic, not because they're any good.
I think they're pretty tasty because of their blandness.
They're unique. They're not on a par with Pez. If I had my pick between Pez and Necco wafers,
I'd go Necco.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if Necco wafers had a cool dispenser.
True
maybe
that.
That's the selling point. Anyway. Guys, let's talk more about the bridge phenomena. Let's extend that a little bit. We talked about how bridges are known for hauntings and how they can be dark, remote places that are just kind of ho-hum during the day, but at night when the fog rolls in and the owls are hooting and you're up there looking for a scare, is it something about a bridge?
There is, I'm sure you know the name of this bridge. It's the one that connects Woodfin with, down near the, of course, at the river.
Yeah.
Woodfin with...
Pearson's Bridge.
Maybe that's a stone bridge. Creepy, long.
Right. The end of Old Leicester Highway and Riverside.
Oh,
If you were to, is it like where if you would, were exit to go to UNCA and you turn back to the left, is it closer, like the way that you would go up to the old Square D building and the school board buildings over there, or is it further out? I'm not sure I know which one you're talking about.
It was the one that connected Woodfin with the way where...
Is it the way Josh would go from his house over to Forrest's house?
Yes.
Yes,
that
okay.
is exactly the one. It is so creepy. You swear. I mean, it's always this really dark night, and there's fog, and you just know the headless horseman is on the other end. I hate that thing. I hate that bridge. With the fire of a thousand suns, I hate that bridge.
Oh, my
the
goodness.
The fire of
it
a
is,
thousand suns.
So creepy.
I hate that bridge. Wow. Well, if you're going to hate...
Damn the bridge.
If you're going to hate, it might as well be a bridge. Hey, I was talking to Josh. This reminded me of it. I was talking to Josh when he was back in town a few months ago. We were standing out on the sidewalk outside a venue down in West Asheville. I'd taken Josh to hear a little surf rock. As a matter of fact, our buddies, the Ouroboros boys. And we're standing out on the sidewalk chatting, and I asked Josh, I said, Josh, if you could have one image, you know, from your mind or your imagination or memory or whatever that sort of embodies all things paranormal that you would think would make a great piece of art, and you knew an artist that you could describe it to that could nail it just the way you see it in the mind, in your mind, what would it be? And he described to me something like the Phantasmagoria, or something like the H.P. Lovecraft story From Beyond, where there's this guy with all of these creatures and demons and weird things from other dimensions just kind of coming out of the ether all around him. And I said, yeah, that's pretty dark. I said, like H.P. Lovecraft's From Beyond. And he said, exactly. And I said, well, there are some artists who have done this sort of Lovecraftian thing, and I bet we could find you a print of something that would suit that to a T. But if I could have such a thing, it would be a picture of a caravan of cars with their headlights on late at night going across that bridge that Shelley is describing that she hates with the full moon in the sky.
Yeah.
And it would be the lemur team moving all the gear from Josh's house out of storage over to the lab that we set up in Forrest's basement.
I can see that.
Do you remember when we were over there at Josh's house at like midnight packing cars? Everybody in Lemur, everybody that had a car was invited to come on, pitch in and help. We're going to set up the Lemur lab over at Forrest's place.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. So we go hang out over at Josh's, nice social, and then we pack our cars with every, you know, the Vandergraaf generators hanging out the back window, mm-hmm. and styrofoam mannequin, you know, wig blocks, weird, I don't know what some of this stuff was even for. Joshua P. Warren's weird science project in all its strange facets. A lot of that stuff is in the Asheville Mystery
Museum
now, yes. Anyway, plasma tubes, static generators, stuffed into all of our cars, and then we caravan late at night in the fog, and here's these carloads. It's kind of like a scene out of Ghostbusters or something, only there's a caravan of all these cars packed with all this weird gear en route to the Lemur lab, and the moon is high and we are lunatics now. And we're crossing the bridge over that river, and it's the bridge that Shelley hates. I had no idea you held such hatred for that bridge.
It
what is,
just
it?
Do you hate the John Wayne movie Bridge Over River Kwai as well?
No, it's just this particular bridge.
Just that bridge.
Late at night when it's... I mean, there is nobody around. It is creepy. It feels like something is there. Never seen anything. Kept my eyes peeled, though, because I was certain I was going to see something one
night. Have you ever walked that bridge?
Are you kidding me? I might walk it. Now, hey, maybe we'll do a remote and we will cross that bridge.
Oh, I think so.
We'll cross that bridge.
We got it. We got to do a remote with Shelly walking that bridge.
It is a long bridge. I'm sure it was impressive and with the caravan.
Hey, this kind of ties in with what we were talking about a few weeks ago, the Mississippi River hauntings and the Tallahatchie Bridge and Bobby Gentry walking across the old iron bridge out of Money, Mississippi. See, there is something integral about the hauntedness of bridges. I can't say that I've ever been particularly fearful of a bridge, but yeah, standing on the old stone bridge, it wasn't the old stone bridge, unfortunately. It loses some of its character when they build a new fangled bridge. But the old iron bridges, the truss bridges, when I see those out in the country, sometimes I do have to just kind of park my car on the side of the river and walk that bridge.
Next hour, we'll be talking about the state of America's bridges and how they're all going to be failing. You want to talk about some haunted bridges? There's going to be a lot
That's
of deaths
scary.
Coming up because there's like four dudes in the whole country to inspect like every bridge or something.
Oh, man. The Mothman prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
That was a bridge disaster. There was a bridge disaster.
Is that Silver Spring Bridge?
It's the Silver... Oh, there's a song about it. Wow. Yeah, a song about it published on a South Carolina small label. I can't think of it. We'll look at that. There's people out there that are a step ahead of us. They're like, these guys are just like brain deficient or something. But no, we're just rambling here. But, you know, I think we're hitting on a lot of good points, making a lot of good points.
Yeah.
I think the bridges symbolically represent a transition from one place to another. The Silver Bridge in West Virginia?
Yes.
The Silver Bridge, site of a tragic collapse and many deaths associated with the Mothman prophecies. Yeah, so bridges. Maybe we'll wrap this hour up and compare to some other structures that are always associated with hauntings. Always associated.
The building downtown, the Jackson Building.
I think Shelley might know where I'm going with this. You ever been to the Smith McDowell House?
I have.
We'll be right back. Speaking of strange.
Your arms around me, I need to feel your touch. Fickle flame. Hey! To think I held you yesterday, your love was just a game. A golden bird that flies away, a candle's fickle flame. Hey! To think I held you yesterday, your love was just a game. Hey! You tell me that you love me so. You tell me.
It's speaking of strange, talking about some ghostly transitions, how common, the common things that you cross every day are things that you come across or may cross literally in the case of a bridge. I got kicked off on the bridge wavelength last week talking about Lydia, the hitchhiking ghost down in Jamestown, North Carolina, near High Point. And lo and behold, the site where she has been encountered even bears her name, Lydia's Bridge, much as we have a Helen's Bridge here in Asheville that is a notoriously haunted location. They have Lydia's Bridge down there. They've built a new overpass, but the old Lydia's Bridge is just a few yards, maybe a couple hundred yards off of the new road, so you can stroll down there and take a look. Mike Reniger, author of Roadside Revenants and Tar Heel Terrors, Ghosts of the Triad, he sent me some modern pictures of Lydia's Bridge. Fascinating stuff. I encourage you to check out his work. Google that guy, Mike Reniger, I believe, R-E-N-E-G-A-R, Roadside Revenants. That's a good word. You know the expression revenant? Have you ever heard the word revenant before?
In the Leo DiCaprio movie, wasn't that the one with the bear, the revenant?
Is there a Leo movie called?
The one that came out like a year or two ago.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Heard it was really good.
I heard exactly the opposite.
Yeah. Well, I heard there was like a bear rape in it.
Well, we haven't done a movie recommendation.
We can't recommend.
We can't recommend that one. But we're throwing out a movie that Shelley says nay, and Sam says I've heard good things. A friend of a friend who said that they knew somebody that once saw the ghost of Helen up at the bridge said that they liked. That Leo DiCaprio. I don't know. What was the Leonardo DiCaprio movie where he's wandering around a spooky asylum? That was probably 10 years or so ago.
We're going to recommend DiCaprio. I'm going to go to the beach.
I saw Gangs of New York not too long ago. Liked it. Gangs of New York.
The Departed.
Yeah.
That's,
good,
that's
good,
a
one.
Good one.
Shelley, you watch many movies?
No, I don't really have time to watch any movies. I think I'm trying to remember the last time I went to a movie. It might have been that Christmas movie with Sam.
No way.
The Krampus.
That was like 2 years ago.
It probably is.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, I never go to the movies.
Just think back. A movie that you saw, and when the movie was done, you thought that was a fine movie. We put
Midnight
Shelley
in the Garden of Good and Evil. I kept going to that one by myself. I loved that movie.
Okay. That one's fun. That's the Savannah movie, right? Yeah.
Mystery. Voodoo, cemeteries.
Yeah, weird. Yeah, exactly. Strange love trysts and scandal and... all the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
And the South, and a lot of pretty good accents in that movie.
What's the movie you've seen most that you saw most in the theater?
Pulp Fiction.
How many times?
7 or 8.
Whoa, that's pretty good.
Because if you remember Pulp Fiction, it was like 2.5 hours long, but it stayed in the theaters forever. I didn't see it for like the first 3 months, and everybody kept saying, oh God, you're going to love it, you're going to love it. And it was playing in like the second run in the dollar movie theaters everywhere.
Road or?
I saw it here in Asheville. I saw it in Florida a couple of times. I saw it in Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah, because it seemed like it was in the theaters for at least six or eight months.
It's rare that you'll see something in the theaters more than once these days, because I mean, if I take myself out, I got a ticket and a slushie, no popcorn, and it's like $22.
Now, the last time I paid full price to see a movie more than once, I couldn't tell you. But I'll see them in the second run houses. Asheville Pizza and Brew. Anytime I can catch a movie for $2 or $3, And if it's something good, I'll go sit in the theater and watch it again.
I'm really weird. Monday night, late show, like 10:30, I'm like the only person in there.
Okay, Sam, how about you? Movie most seen in the theater?
It would probably have to be either between The Matrix or JFK. I saw JFK a lot. I've probably seen, that's like over 3 hours long, and I've probably seen it well into the 30 or 40 times.
Wow, how many in the theater? At least?
Oh, 5, maybe 6.
Pretty good. Yeah, Sammy likes JFK. Vance likes Pulp Fiction.
I love Pulp Fiction, too.
And Shelley likes Midnight in the Garden of Good. Midnight in the Garden
it's
of
the
Good.
It's the only movie she's ever seen.
I used to see movies all the time.
Except the movie where Cloris Leachman is being pursued by a hearse.
Well, you know what? I think maybe that wasn't the name. I think maybe Cloris Leachman really was in the movie I was talking about.
No, she's just dead.
Because the hearse that you were showing me last week, that was not the same hearse. That was not. I would have recognized that hearse, and that was
Speaking
not it.
Of strange.